ideas and new technology are causing seismic shifts in the media industry. Where are we headed? What does it mean? Keep listening. Media strategist Gabriella Mirabelli talks with the brightest minds in entertainment and business. Meet the innovators, the risk takers, and the disruptors on the front lines of change from Hollywood, Wall Street, Silicon Valley, and beyond. The future is coming to a screen near you. Are you ready? This is the Up Next podcast with Gabriella Mirabelli.
Welcome to Up Next. I'm your host, Gabriella Mirabelli. As a result of the coronavirus, there are record numbers of people who have been furloughed or lost their jobs. This has led to a lot of resumes being sent out and a lot of silence being received in return, which can lead to self-doubt and insecurity. This is why I thought now would be the perfect time to interview Christine Gerke. Christine is one of the leading dramatic sopranos in the world. She has sung much of the great soprano repertoire in the most important opera houses and with many of the leading orchestras around the world. She's also won many awards, including the 2001 Richard Tucker Award, the 2015 Musical American Vocalist of the Year Award, and the 2017 Opera News Award. She also knows a thing or two about being knocked back, having a crisis of confidence, and overcoming it to come back better than before. Christine, thank you so much for joining us today.
Oh, it's a pleasure. Thank you for having me.
For many people, what we do is inextricably linked to who we are. Finding oneself unemployed through an event outside of one's control can really unmoor our sense of self. The key to finding purchase is working through it, learning about yourself, and persevering, which is why I'm so excited to talk to you. You're at the top of your field, but it wasn't a cakewalk to get there. And even now, you're so successful, and you're finding yourself expanding, pivoting, reinventing. But to start, you didn't always think you'd be an opera singer, and you went to college to study something different. Can you give listeners who might not know your backstory how you found yourself a singer and not, say, a viola player?
Sure. So I was in school and, you know, in grade school, they did this thing that they do in every grade school. They, in certain grades, they offer orchestra and band, and it's the first thing you can try out. And I did, in fact, try to play the viola, but I didn't get very far since my father thought I wasn't going to stick with it and didn't get me an instrument. It tends to limit, but I did learn how to shake my own hands and hold the instrument for 3 weeks. So that was good. But then I ended up in the next grade and they offered band instruments and I started to play the clarinet, largely because my father liked Artie Shaw. Imagine his disappointment when I started playing Mozart. But I played all the way through high school. And when I got to high school, I lost my mother when I was 12, and music became the thing that sustained me. It kept me going. It was my safe place to go. And the person who really brought me out of my shell with the music was my high school band director. And he was young. It was, you know, his second job. And he was just so cool. And people wanted to be involved in music. And people, we had two concert bands. Five of us from our class went on to be musicians, but people wanted to be a part of this. And I thought, you know, this is what I want to do with my life. I want kids to get this excited about music, to have a safe place to create, to get in touch with their souls. And so I decided to go into music education. My intent was to be a band teacher. And clearly the universe had other ideas. left turn. I never really was interested in singing or opera. I had seen one on television when I was 13, but I had to take a test to show how I could sight read music. All, you know, music majors have to do this. And so they hand you a piece of music on a paper and you have to sing what's on the paper. And hopefully we get it as close as possible. And then they know where to place you to continue your studies in sight reading. Well, they were more impressed with my voice than they were with my instrumental skills, which was quite a blow. But I thought, okay, I'll just do this instead. What? But I took a left turn and I started to sing. And it turned out that I was okay at it. And but, you know, it's funny because that's something that I was surprised by. If we leave ourselves open, sometimes we find the things that we are great at that we had no intention of pursuing.
I have to say, it's sort of like the fantasy where you discover a secret, an amazing skill, and you totally got to live that. It's pretty amazing to have such a happy accident.
Well, it was a happy accident, exactly those words, you know, and it's been an incredible ride for me. But right in the middle of it, you know, I was going along great and I was having an international career. And right in the middle of it, my voice just changed. And it wasn't unexpected. It was just very early. And it put a real obstacle in my growth as a singer and in my career, because it was pretty much a full stop. So I wasn't sure I was going to continue.
That's jumping from college all the way to world renowned. And there are a few steps in there. So before we get there, and I do want to get there, but I first want to cover one thing, and that's after college. You entered the Metropolitan Opera's Young Artist Development Program.
Yes.
And you've shared in the past that you didn't always feel like you belonged, like you were a bit of an outsider. What was behind that?
Well, I mean, I was the one who wasn't interested in singing, you know, and it was relatively soon after college. You know, I had only done two sort of shorter summer apprenticeships. I was graduating after an 8-year stint trying to find who I was with a bachelor in liberal arts from a state university. So I didn't go to a fancy conservatory. I didn't do the National Council auditions, which is a voice competition that the Metropolitan Opera sponsors every year. And most of the people who ended up in that development program had been chosen from those auditions. And I sort of came in through the back door. I was recommended and they had me come in and do an audition for them. And I felt very much like I didn't belong. I wasn't on the same level as everyone else. I mean, it was ridiculous because I was totally on the level. No, I had it in my head. You know, this is, it's hard to believe in yourself. It's very hard to believe in yourself when so many people want to push you down.
Well, this feeling of not belonging, it's something that a lot of women executives and minorities also feel a lot of. You know, people in business who went to a state university and everybody else went to Harvard, it can make you feel insecure. Mm-hmm. It can make you feel like an imposter.
Right.
So how, in this situation where you were at the level, they accepted you, you had every right to be there just like everybody else. But you were still feeling that sense of otherness.
Yeah.
So what did you do? How did you cope with that feeling? And what sort of tools and resources did you pull upon so that you could do it?
Well, it's funny. The first thing I was thinking of when you said that was fake it till you make it. And I realized that, in fact, what I do for a living is acting. And there are so many people, and I would say in my profession, but there are so many people in the world. I think we can all look at people in our profession and say, these people are beyond not qualified to be doing the job that they are doing. How did they get this position? And the thing is, they told people that they should be in that position. They believed in themselves so much that other people were forced to do it as well. And in fact, it sounds simplistic, but that is the first step. If you believe in yourself so fiercely that no one else can argue, then that is a strength that no one can give you. And that's what I had to do.
It comes from inside.
It does. It comes from inside. Exactly that.
So here we are. And now let's catch up to your career. You're moving forward. You're getting recognition. It's been about 10 years after the development program.
Yeah.
And then you have this vocal crisis. And it doesn't happen in private.
No. No, it very public.
The New York City Opera. Can you describe what happens?
Yeah, I mean, you know, it honestly, it makes me crazy. Opera News jumped on this vocal crisis thing. The way that voices work that do the things that I do, and now we'll get there, but I sing the Spear and Magic Helmet, Spear and Magic Helmet, I sing that stuff. And if you've ever seen Bugs Bunny, you know exactly what I'm talking about. But that kind of voice, we don't start singing this stuff. We start singing other things, and it develops into a voice that can sing in a 4,000-seat house without amplification with a 100-piece orchestra. But you don't start out there. And everyone had a very good idea that that's where I was heading. And at some point in your development, you stop, you realize that the voice is changing, and then you change the repertoire, you change the music and the operas and things that you are singing. I read lots of books about my voice type and, you know, anticipating that people would be right about this. And basically it told me to expect a big change in my late 30s, early 40s. Well, it started happening when I was 32. And I could not somehow or another put together that, in fact, it just might be happening early. I thought, well, I broke it.
What does it mean for somebody who's not a musician? Because a lot of listeners on the podcast, you know, marketing executives, we sing in the shower.
Which is awesome, by the way.
It sounds great.
I love to sing in the shower.
But when you say you broke it, you're singing and you know that your voice is going to change. But how does that manifest? Doesn't mean you can't get your breath. You're on stage. And what is it that you can't do? What does it mean?
Right. So I didn't break it, by the way.
No.
Surprise. Spoiler. No, but I went to a scary place in my head. Suddenly my breathing was not quite right. And when we sing over, you know, huge orchestras and big houses, the way that opera singers support is, now you can all do this at home, and I know you're all going to be making this noise and I will laugh in about an hour. But if, you know, everybody thinks of Santa Claus and ho, ho, ho. And if you do that, you feel your abdomen moving. Those muscles are the ones that support that sound. I had stopped supporting that sound because my voice had gotten bigger and I was trying to keep it smaller. And so it's as if, do you know when you get start to get upset and then you start speaking and your throat gets really tight? It's that feeling. And suddenly I was doing that, trying to sing. I was very nervous and I didn't understand what was going on. And it wasn't disastrous. It really wasn't. It just wasn't what I could do. And it was markedly not what I could do. And people were asking me what's going on. And I could honestly answer, I have no idea. Oh, it was disastrous. Disastrous. I thought, first of all, here's a career that I never expected to have and a gift that I never expected to have. I had been able to travel all over the world and everything had been going astonishingly well. And all of a sudden, it's completely coming crashing down, and not just coming crashing down, but opening the season at New York City Opera in the title role of an opera. This is a really big deal. And it was, I thought about it and I thought, you know what? I'm not sure what's going on, but I don't want to look back on this and feel as though I'm ashamed. And so maybe it's just time to stop because I want to be proud of what I've done already.
So you're in the role and there are other people who have been telling you all along, your voice is going to get bigger and things are going to change.
Yes.
And nobody gives you a heads up, like, this is what we think is happening?
No, because I'll tell you what, there are always, and I am certain it's got to be the same in any profession. There are going to be people, when you are a rising star, they want to push you up the mountain. But the minute anything goes wrong, they don't want to be associated with the mistake. And by the same token, the people who want to push you up the mountain, if you get to the top, look around really fast because someone's behind you ready to push you off. There are some folks who I feel like did that. And then there are other folks who, I mean, the thing is I have luckily created a really good reputation in this business. People really like me and they wanted to help, but they didn't quite know how. They recognized what was going on, but they didn't know how to help. And I took it upon myself when I was talked out of quitting by friends to change my voice teacher and start to chat with somebody. And the person that I found, she said, I don't understand why you're so scared about this. It's not a big deal at all. I mean, it's hardly anything. In fact, your voice just got bigger. And I'm glad she thought so because I couldn't get through 3 pages of music without crying in the lesson. I was terrified.
So it seems like there are actually 2 things going on. There's an emotional component and a technical component.
Exactly. Well, they have to be. You know, our instruments are a part of 2 little rubber bands in our throat. So it's attached to our bodies.
Was the fixing of confidence, the fixing of the technical, was that a virtuous cycle in which you got more technically proficient and the confidence came back? Or did the confidence piece come first? Did you have to fake it till you make it and tell yourself, I believe, and therefore I'm going to stick with this, even though right now the technical isn't there? How did it work for you?
So what was terrifying about it is that when I made this switch, I had 3 months until I was supposed to premiere a brand new production of Don Giovanni at the Metropolitan Opera. And when I walked in the door, I looked at my new teacher and I said, "You have 3 months or I'm quitting." And she said, "Great, no pressure. Come back tomorrow." And
wow, she's got some brass balls.
She seriously does. They're so shiny and they clang when she walks. They're amazing. And she was not worried. It really, in the end, was not a big deal. My voice had gotten bigger, and I told you about the ho 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 thing. And the minute I started to reach back down into that support, instead of trying to sing from that place in my throat, everything changed. Within 1 month, it changed. And she understood what was going on. Now, that wasn't actually the hurdle. I fixed what was going on, and it was growing and growing and growing. And I started to understand with my kind of voice that it would be changing for the rest of my life. And that's fine. Once you have the tools in any profession, once we have the tools to deal with any given situation, we know what tool to pull out of our tool bag to be able to address what's going on. So now I have tools, but I had to get back out and start auditioning for people to prove to them that I wasn't broken. That was terrifying. And it messed with my head a lot. And, I would go in and all I could think of is not that I am ready to do this, but how sad that these people are so kind that they're willing to hear me, but they're doing it out of the goodness of their heart. And they don't think I can do this.
So did you get rejected?
No.
Or were your fears unfounded?
Well, they were unfounded. But again, what you said earlier about the technical and the emotional being connected, that became the issue, because my emotional suddenly, if you're trying to give a speech to somebody or a presentation and you're in the middle of this and you start to get nervous about it and you start not to believe in yourself, you can start to feel that in your voice. That's what was happening when I was singing. And so I went to a sports psychologist.
Oh,
I did.
Really?
I did. Because I don't know, what we do is like figure skating. It's unbelievably athletic, but it has to look incredibly graceful. And I thought, well, that seems to be the person. So I chatted with them and I went for a few sessions and it really helped. But the thing that I came away with was he said, find a little mantra for yourself. I said, okay. And the mantra that I chose was, and this sounds, I was always terrified about people sort of hearing what it is if they don't know opera, because it sounds like something out of, Nazi Germany, which is horrible, but it's Sieg oder Tod, which means victory or death. And it is a line from one of Wagner's operas that I sing, and it's from, it's the Valkyrie. And she is this unbelievably powerful woman that is in fact the savior that saves the world at the end of the entire story. And she is willing to give everything up to do the right thing, to be strong for the people who cannot. And I thought, well, if that's not my mantra, I don't know what should be.
Oh, so cool.
Right? So I got a crappy little silver ring, and on the inside of it, I had inscribed Sieg oder Tod, and I only wore it for auditions to remind myself. And it was just for me. No one could see it, but it gave me purpose and strength. And there was one other thing that I did, and I know that this is going to sound like a far-fetched thing, but I guarantee you this is something that can cross over into any profession. I created an audition character for myself. I decided that walking in the door, what do I want to show people? I want to show them strength. I want to show them confidence. I want to show them that people should not mess with me. I want to show them that I am smart. And so I chose characters that I had portrayed and sort of chose the ones that I thought reflected those values. And I created a character for myself that I literally put on before I walked in the door for an audition.
Wow. That's a great piece of thinking that anybody can put to work as an interview persona or a meeting persona or a presentation.
Exactly.
Fantastic. So one of the things you mentioned was that you've come to realize your voice is going to change throughout your life. Mm-hmm. How do you know when the time has come to stop singing a certain role? And how do you come to grips with saying goodbye to roles that you sang in the past? How do you come to grips with saying goodbye to elements of your past?
Well, the funny thing is about saying goodbye to elements of your past is that anytime you do that, you make room for elements in your future. And I am grateful for every role that I have done. There are a few I wish I could do again, but everything that I have done in the past has prepared me for what is coming in the future. And every lesson that I have learned from something that I have done in the past, I take into the next project that I take on, the next role that I take on. And by saying role, you know, we're at a time right now, none of the artists are on stage. I would be scared to give you the number of the amount of money that I lost this year because of my contracts. But in March, I was sent home, and there is a clause in our contracts that is called force majeure, which basically means if it is an act of God, and thank you, union, for putting the word pandemic in, the companies do not have to pay out on the contracts that we have. I have contracts that go out 4 years, and I'm guessing I've probably lost a year's worth of income now.
Actually, this is what I was thinking about. You become one of the leading dramatic sopranos in the world. The New York Times profiles you about your performance as Brunhilde in Wagner's Ring Cycle, one of the most demanding roles in opera. And then the pandemic sets in and theaters close. What do you do?
Well, I panicked like a crazy person for 2 months. And I'm not a depressive personality for the most part. In fact, a lot of people would be very annoyed by how bubbly I am. But I actually scared myself. I was so terrified because I saw the long range forecast for what this was going to be for our industry. I couldn't sort of function for 2 months. I had no idea what to do. And one day, a friend of mine in Houston called me and said, "Can you go over some music with me? I have to record a thing." I said, "Sure." Yeah. So we got on a Zoom call and I worked through it with her. And she was so overjoyed by the whole thing. And I hadn't sung in 2.5 months from the day they sent me home. I was rehearsing a Ring Cycle, actually, in Chicago. And 4 years of work went into that one, and it was supposed to open in 3 weeks. And the entire thing, well, for me and for the company who had planned on an entire Ring Cycle, which is one of the most expensive things to produce. But I hung up with her, and I had no urge to sing the whole time, but I thought, well, okay, my manager told me I should learn the role that she was working on. So I sang through the aria that she sent. And then I sang through another character's things, and I sang through more music, and then I picked up another score and sang through that, and ended up singing Richard Rodgers songs. I mean, you know, for musicals, and just I vocal vomited for about 4 hours, and everything just came out. And I thought, well, that's done. Okay, I got that out of the way. So it seems that I'm pretty good at this, and I'm sitting at home, and all of the young singers are sitting at home too, and they don't know if college will happen, and all of the summer programs are now not going to happen. I'm not going to sit here and do nothing. So I decided to create what a lot of my colleagues are doing, a sort of a Zoom coaching studio, which I am moving over to. You know, the platforms are constantly changing because the latency is an issue working between musicians. But, you know, I went out, and Sweetwater owns my life now for all of the materials I had to buy to make it happen. But I started coaching online, and I do that about 20 hours a week. And I also am hosting the Metropolitan Opera's HD concerts that are being done pay-per-view. And I just started reaching out in different directions. I have children, I have bills to pay, I have a skill set, and I know what I'm good at. And so I started putting myself in front of people and telling them what I should be doing for them, which is kind of obnoxious, but it seems to be working.
Precisely. I was thinking, you know, boiling that down, that's advice for anyone who in their lives right now is thinking about a reset, right? So we can generalize it beyond music. You looked at your skills and
I looked at my skill set and I realized that it's not limited to one specific thing. People would say, okay, you're an opera singer. What else can you possibly do? Well, I can deal with difficult personalities. I can, and please believe me, that is true. I can organize things. I am great at dealing with travel and housing. I am really good at dealing with online things. I have a skill set to be able to teach. I have a very bubbly personality and I am very good at doing on-air things. And I feel like I can be a spokesperson for a lot of different things. And so I just decided to start putting myself forward to help in any way I possibly can. And I feel like at the moment I have my hands in a lot of different pots right now to see what's going to pan out. My end goal, we are going to have to rebuild the entertainment industry from the ground up, and perhaps it's needed a reset for a long time. And whether or not we like it, we have one. And I very much would like to be part of that. My goal someday is to be running my own opera company. And I have things to learn. And this is a perfect time for me to be doing it. To that end, when this all started, I contacted everyone, all the heads of the companies that I had worked with, and said, do you have an hour for me? Do you have a half an hour for me? And they said, sure. And I got on and I said, right, I would like to do what you're doing at some point. Tell me what I need to know.
So smart. So you're really expanding, educating yourself. You're looking ahead. Now, is that because you project that your voice is going to last X number of years more, or just your own personal curiosity and development? What are the factors going on in there?
The thing is, I have been sort of, as you say, sort of the outsider, and I've always felt that in my life. People have this image of opera singers, you know, dripping in jewels and fur and tiaras and riding around in limos. And I live in New Jersey and was driving a minivan until recently, and I shop at Old Navy. And I mean, I'm not exactly, you know, the typical image of what people think that this is. And because of that, it is more like me than it is about the image that the business has. People have an idea that opera is this elitist thing for your grandparents and it's stupid and no one can understand it. And why bother with something so antiquated? Well, because it's unbelievably cool. Because in fact, there are a ton of Americans who are fantastic at this. We are some of the best trained in the world. And I feel like because it is such an international, I want to say venue. It's an international business, international art form. We sometimes get lost in the mix. And we talked about New York City Opera earlier. When Beverly Sills, who is an amazing singer, but also an amazing administrator, was running New York City Opera, it was a company that was a proving ground for American artists. And it has sadly gone by the wayside. And I think we desperately need this again. And my goal is to find the company that can be that again. And I would very much like to be the champion for American singers.
Oh, wow.
Give them a platform. So that's sort of my goal. That's what I would like to be doing. And you're right. The voice does have a limited amount of years. My voice, however, if I wanted to sing until I was 65, I probably could. It would just mean that I would change roles and start to sing the nurses and the mothers and let the young ones go have the hard time. I'll just hold their train.
Well, so we've spoken about imposter syndrome earlier in our conversation. And when you have these conversations, when you reach out to these people to educate yourself, are they patting you on the head, oh, that's nice, dear? Or are they truly taking you seriously and saying, yeah, she's going to do this?
You know, this is the funny thing. And I know the voice that ends up in all of our heads. I truly do. I feel like I actually created that specific voice and I should be getting royalties on it. I mean, but the funny thing is, when I pick up the phone and I thought, just do it. Just do it. You know, you can pretend to be a 15, you're 51 and you can pretend to be a 15-year-old Valkyrie on stage. And you are a 51-year-old soccer mom from New Jersey. If you can pull that off, you can make a phone call. And the people that I called up, I thought, they're not going to take me seriously. This is some singer trying to find their way into something else like every singer is trying to do right now. But nobody did that. No one patted me on the head. They all had honest conversations with me. And quite a few said, would you please keep me posted about what's going on? Because we don't know where our company is right now, but I would very much like to know if someone else gives you an offer for something. And having that kind of conversation, even that kind of validation, it really lifted my heart and it lifted my spirits. And it suddenly made me realize that I can do this. I am determined to be a force for good in my profession, whether I am on stage or I am behind the scenes. And as I told my friends and I told my family, you know, I can't leave the opera house. I can leave the stage, but leaving the opera house would kill my soul. And so I'm not going to.
Good for you. So I want to thank you for this absolute jewel box of a conversation. I admire you, and I'm so appreciative that you shared this with us, because I think all of these lessons have such broad application. So thank you.
It's a total pleasure. Thank you so much for having me. I really appreciate the opportunity to chat with your audience.
We've reached the end of another episode of Up Next, and I'd like to close by thanking my production team at Up Next, my friend Rob Naughton, the voice artist who recorded our open, and of course, all of you, the members of our audience. Thank you. I'll see you right here next time on Up Next.